already. This is
Greetings, this is Reverend Juliet Nightingale, and welcome to this transmission of Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is a program centered on the nature of consciousness and life continuum as revealed through near-death, out-of-body, and similar spiritually transformative experiences. Topics range from what everyone should know about the dying process, the many facets of after-death communications, living interdimensionally and being multisensory, intuition and telepathy, and more. We feature special guests for those experiences and researchers in the realm of NDEs and related topics. For more information about the work that we do through Toward the Light and this radio program, please visit our website, towardthelight.org, and our media site, towardthelight.info. This week I am very pleased to have two special guests who have endured such trials in their lives beyond anything that you would see in a horror film or a fiction story, but this is about how love and light do triumph over the greatest unimaginable adversity and darkness. Let us welcome to Toward the Light Mark Phillips and Kathy O'Brien, authors of Transformation of America and Access Denied for Reasons of National Security. Welcome, Mark and Kathy. How are you?
Doing very well, Julia. Thank you so much for having us on.
Well, it's wonderful to have you, too. And I guess we're going to speak with you first, Mark, because it's sort of hard to hear. But I'm just so grateful to have you with us on Toward the Light. And I know that both of you, like myself, are near-death experiences. And I would like to ask you to share a little bit about the history that really brought you to the path that led you to rescuing Kathy from the horrific experiences that she's been through. And if you are at liberty to share anything about your NDE, feel free to do that too.
Kathy?
I think she was talking to you. It is very difficult to hear.
I can barely hear.
Okay.
But I have great hearing.
All right. Well, I was actually... Well, maybe we'll just start again. Whichever one of you can hear my little tiny voice.
We can hear you better now.
Okay. That's great. Mark, if you'd like to start and share with us some of the history of your
work. Of course.
And your life path, what brought you to this wonderful transformation that led you to Kathy?
Well, I'll make this a thumbnail sketch. All of the information is in pretty much in detail in our books, of course, and you were kind enough to mention them. And if we're able to give out our 800 number, we'll do that as well at some point in the show.
By all means, sure.
My association with mind scientists began while I was going to school and working. I became eligible for the draft in 1966, and it was at that point in time that I had moved my draft board around the country so that in an effort to avoid going to Vietnam and being cannon fodder, because my grades were not so good that I could get a deferment. And at that time, they were drafting people even with good grades. So I suppose you would say I was very fortunate in that when I was drafted and I presented myself to the draft people and went through the physical examination and the psychological examination, I told the persons in charge of the military there that I would not make a very good military candidate because of my own childhood. I had a very abusive childhood from a psychological standpoint, certainly not anything sexual, but as Kathy experienced. But nevertheless, I had issues that I didn't feel like would make me a good candidate for being a team member and being in the regular military. So they relisted me, and then they introduced me to some gentlemen all in suits who said they would contact me at some future point in my life and that I could serve my country in another way. Well, at that point in time, I secured a job with the Ampex Corporation, who is famous for manufacturing audio and video equipment. They invented the instant replay. They invented a number of things. A Russian scientist by the name of Alexander Ipantiatov founded the company. Brilliant man and quite the humanitarian as well. But nevertheless, Ampex was a part of the military-industrial complex, and at that point is when I was granted, or I was brought in as a recruit into the intelligence community while I was working for Ampex. And it was at this point that I became interested in my job immensely, because I was being exposed to the very thing that I was studying in school and the very thing that I wanted to know more about. And that was the mind sciences, particularly mind-brain function, because when I was a small boy, I was on a horse with my mother, and she fainted and fell off, and the horse stepped into her head, giving her permanent brain damage. And, of course, my goal was to figure out how to help her in some way. And by doing so, I had pursued mind sciences in my higher education, and now I had an opportunity to become a part of a number of teams working for a not-so-secret project known as MK-Ultra. I never saw any torture of human beings or animals. You hear about all these things, and they're quite true, but within the intelligence community, everything's compartmentalized. So my education was that of, I was seeing prisoners that were in prison for forever, for the rest of their lives, who were not rehabilitatable in by conventional means, by any stretch of imagination. But these people were being rehabilitated with using these advanced mind science techniques. And it included, and not to encompass all, of course, but it included drugs, hypnosis, harmonics, which harmonic generators were used with crude computers to generate certain wavelengths to the brainstem. And these people's brains were literally being rewired by their own brain to make them what would appear to be very normal, functional, compassionate individuals, and many of them high function, I mean, with high IQs. So really, I had a wonderful job. I did advance in my work with Ampex, and then I was moved to other places, other positions with other companies, where I was vice president of sales and marketing for two separate airlines, and also for a short period of time was vice president of marketing for a company that manufactured medical equipment. And that was during the period of time when I was involved in the swap of many technologies that we take today commonplace. One of the companies that I work for, one in particular, Laser Systems and Electronics, was actually founded by a bunch of former NASA top scientists, engineers, who had a piece of technology they were using for monitoring the body functions of astronauts in space, and it was called telemetry. Of course, now it's in every hospital. They monitor patients from a nurse's station. They can monitor many, many patients, all the patients' body functions. But at that time, it was unheard of. And I felt very, very fortunate to be in such a humanitarian job that I was actually setting up these hospitals. And I was also having to secure the file films and tapes of surgeries and this sort of thing, and rehabilitation of particular individuals. I have no idea why they were chosen. if they were volunteers or whatever, but these were people that had undergone horrific accidents, or maybe there was a birth defect or whatever, and it was being corrected. And these file films were going back to Fort George Meade, Maryland, which is in essence most likely NSA, the National Security Agency's location is in that area, but this was going back to Fort George Meade, Maryland, and they had, I was just merely the bag man for the for these file films and tapes. My life progressed onward from there, and I stayed within the Mayan sciences until I was recruited by a company called Capital International Airways. I believe if you take the initials of the company, it was formed in 1947, the same year the 1947 U.S. National Security Act was formed, which is what has stripped all Americans and all of our allies of their rights of adjudication. Of
how ironic is that, hey?
Yes. Okay. At any rate, what I was fortunate enough to have been able to pursue, I was no longer being associated with the Mayan sciences, and I was strictly in aviation at this point. And they moved me to Alaska, where another airline was formed by a bunch of CIA people and other intelligence groups that I'm not sure who they were associated with. And as a matter of fact, Steven Seagal made a movie that was highly dramatized, loosely based on what I was involved with, called On Sacred Ground, where the U.S. government, using the intelligence community, was attempting to play the same old trick that was played on the Indians when they gave them the infected smallpox-infected blankets, and when they wouldn't allow them, or when they killed off all the buffalo and they had no way of keeping themselves warm. This was basically the same idea and concept they were using, and I didn't know this, of course, was to annihilate the Eskimos. They were sitting on top of all that oil up in Prudhoe Bay. Not in Prudhoe Bay, on the North Slope. But nevertheless, when I did find out that some of this was going on, I resigned my position at the end of my contract. I resigned and said that I was going to go into business for myself, which I did. Went into the antique business, and as most people will tell you, once you think you're out of the intelligence community, you're not. You can never get away from them unless you could make a clean break and honestly have no association practically with anybody else. And it was in 1986, when I was doing some work again for the U.S. Department of State the Travel and Tourism Division. Well, actually, that was in 84 and 85, under Secretary of Travel and Tourism Donna Tuttle, which gave me pretty much access to deliver documents and make contacts all over the world as someone representing tourism. that went on until I was contacted by an old friend of mine who I disenfranchised from because we kind of outgrown each other completely as childhood acquaintances and friends, who introduced me to a fellow by the name of Alex Houston. Alex Houston was a ventriloquist, a stage hypnotist, and probably ranks as one of the most blatantly evil people I've ever had the misfortune of coming in contact with. And I just told you that I worked with MK Ultra scientists. Many of them were Nazis who came out of Nazi Germany, who I think were far, far, far more benevolent and warm-hearted than this Alex Houston character, because none of these people, to my knowledge, ever would even begin to entertain the idea of abusing their own children, or for that matter, abusing anyone else's children. They were just interested in mind sciences, the end. But Alex Houston, it turned out, wanted to form a joint venture company in the People's Republic of China. He had seen my name in the Nashville, Tennessee newspapers on a pretty consistent basis as being an ambassador for this, or I was vice president of this company, and it brought them out of, you know, a virtual bankruptcy and blah, blah, blah. I had been very successful in my business career, aside from being successful within the intelligence community. So he, of course, didn't know anything about my relationship with the intelligence community at all, and invited me to put this company together for him, which I did. And we formed a joint venture corporation to manufacture capacitor systems, which would, in essence, enable the mining companies, which are run by the Chinese military because it's made out of metal, it would enable them not to have to shut their mines down because they were literally running out of electricity. And these capacitor banks would help them curb their use of electricity, which in essence would allow them to keep running.
So I think
shutting down a mine is like shutting down a glass plant or a steel plant. It costs more money to start it back up than it does to just keep it running.
So was it true that at this time you did not know about Alex Houston's
activity? That plays in, and I'm so glad you brought that point up because I'm almost there.
Oh, God love you.
After the joint venture company was put together, I was a president of it, and Alex Houston was vice president. After we had built our factory in the Shenzhen province, the industrial area, industrialized part of southern China, at our ribbon cutting ceremony, Alex Houston could not be there for whatever reason. I don't recall the exact reason. Kathy does, I'm sure. But nevertheless, he couldn't be there, so I was there. And it was at that point that I was approached by a Chinese intelligence officer who opened up a file and showed me all of my classified files on myself personally, which was an incredible breach of security and one that I was going to have to report back to the United States when I got home. Nevertheless, they knew everything there was to know about me, all the way back to my neighbors being interviewed by the intelligence community after I was recruited, and all my school teachers. All of these things, all of these notes and all the tests that I had been taking, all of the they knew how my brain functioned inside and out. And just to have the Chinese know this, aside from the fact that it was very personal, it was also an incredible breach of national security, U.S. national security. But that's not the reason he was showing me the files. He was showing me the files to gain credulity because he was going to expose to me something that was so far outside my realm of knowledge and so far outside of my realm of even thinking about it, that otherwise, I think if he hadn't shown me that, I wouldn't have believed it. But he began to show me a file with pictures of Alex Houston engaging in sex acts with children, and also that Alex Houston was a drug trafficker. He was a money launderer. He was laundering money, and he was doing it for the Central Intelligence Agency. And he was actually going in and out of the White House. And all of this, the Chinese had. They knew who I was and had no concerns about me because they knew that I wanted to separate myself from the intelligence community, and had done so successfully to that point. What they were concerned about was Alex Houston. So they told me that I had to... we had to buy him out, they told me how to get rid of him. I said, we don't do that anymore. I'm not going to get involved in that. They said, no, we'll buy him out. I said, well, that's better. So I went ahead, when I came back home, I turned everything into the Department of State and to a contact I had within the intelligence community, the U.S. Department of State, for oversight, contacted me the next day, and his words still ring in my ears to this day. He said, we took your report, we filed your report, you were never to mention this again, it didn't happen. I said, this is a national security issue, sir. He said, it did not happen. I said, all right. Thank you very much. Well, the fact remains is, Alex Houston, at that point in the game, whether or not he was informed about me and my background, I really don't know. And I still don't know this day. What I do know, though, is that when the Chinese told me that Alex Houston had a young woman and her little child that under his control, meaning mind control, and he was using them as prostitutes, and the guy told me, he said, you realize that child pornography and child prostitution in China, no matter where, what country you're from, is punishable by death. And I said, no, but it should be in my country as well. And he said, well, Mr. Houston can't come into this country because it would create an international incident, and we would not release him back to the United States. And I said, well, he's not going to be coming back here unless he does it under his own volition. And I'll see what I can do to, you know, follow through, and we'll buy him out. So we did buy him out. And at that point in time, I began to dig around, and I found out what Kathy O'Brien, what she had been subjected to, some of the projects that she had been involved with. I found out quite a bit of intelligence on her without any real details. The only thing that I found out about Alex Houston was what I already knew from studying his body language and his and graphology and his handwriting, and of course the fact that he stole from our company that we owned, was that he was everything evil that a person could possibly imagine, and then a whole lot more. It was at that point that I decided that I needed to get Kathy and her daughter out of that situation, and that I would contact a number of fine psychiatrists that I knew that could have been of great help to her and her daughter. And unfortunately, every one of them were still working for the government, and they could not help whatsoever. Nor could they recommend anyone offshore, because I needed to keep my job with as president of the company, and I needed to go back to Hong Kong where my Chinese offices were based. I couldn't do anything at this point, and at this point, all of the money that I had been paid by the Chinese into an account, which, by the way, Alex Houston directed, unfortunately, into a bank called BCCI, the Bank of Credit and Commerce International, which later it became worldwide news that it was a CIA money laundering operation. All of my funds, everything, in every bank account that I had were instantly removed when I got Kathy and her daughter out of Alex Houston's control. The only thing I was left with was just some hard assets that were hidden, some money, cars, a house, and some things that I was in the process of already disposing of anyway because I was in the middle of a divorce. So my life was really upside down at that point. But that was the point to where I made the decision, which I had no idea the ramifications of it, that I was not going to just walk away from this poor woman and her daughter. I wanted to help them get into therapy and to recover from a lifetime of abuse. And when I found out no one would help them, I took them to Alaska, where I had friends, and where I also had some element of security. Of course, there is no real security from you it's impossible to run away from the intelligence community. If they want you dead, you're dead. That's the end of that story. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to make it appear as though that I would be a whole lot less trouble to them if they just let me alone than if they kill me, and it worked. They did try to put me in prison for talking about my previous work. They did try to put me in federal prison. They tried to indict me for threatening the life of the president, which I, of course, never did. All these indictments just went away because they didn't have any proof, and they couldn't manufacture any.
And because wisdom outthinks the criminal mind every time. And no matter what they tried to do, Mark was always able to outthink him because of his wisdom, the love that that motivated him. And I think, you know, love is the most powerful force in the universe. And at that point, there was just no stopping the information that he was able to get out into the public through both of our books and by helping Kelly and I to heal and recover.
And that is such a vitally important point right there, because indeed, I'm sure everybody's on the edge of their seats listening to this, you know, crazier than fiction information that is so absolutely true. And yet, indeed, you know, and when you mention security, Mark, I think indeed the only security that any one of us have got is that comes from divine love.
Oh, I totally agree. And, you know, I'm not making light of this, but there's also another advantage that I had. I minored in law, and I majored in psychology, and since I was one of them for some 19 years, I knew how they thought, and I could forecast their next movements on me, and they were going right by the book, whereas I didn't have to. And I told Kathy in the very beginning, before she even knew her own name, most of the time, I told her, I said, regardless of what you think could happen, it won't. I said, how this is going to turn out is in our favor. And I wasn't really telling a lie. I was stretching the truth enormously, because at that point in time, I was relying upon people within the intelligence community to keep me abreast of what was coming at me before it did, so that I could be prepared. And I was having to depend on people that I really was not comfortable with placing my life with, but I had no other choice. And it worked. It positively worked.
I want to ask you a question here, Mark, and I'm sorry, Catherine. This is this is kind of interesting here, because I know that you are also a near-death experiencer, and I realize you might not be at liberty to talk about it, but my question is, because the near-death experience changes everybody, regardless of how grand or how simple the state may be or the episode may be, I'm wondering if indeed this helped you to possess a confidence, an intuition, an ability that you might not otherwise have had, a knowing that enabled you to cruise through these experiences and be able to make this statement with a deep confidence from this vantage point of your inner knowing. Does that make sense?
It does to me. I can't really go into any details.
I understand.
I was shot at close range and arrived DOA at a hospital. My experience in that area, I really can't go into any detail on, other than I've got 1,300 stitches in my stomach and a bullet hole in my side.
Right.
That did a lot of organ damage, and most people thought I would have died. As a matter of fact, I did die, and I was resuscitated there in the waiting room by a doctor. Who thought he could save me, and he did. Now, I've also been struck by lightning twice.
God love you.
And so I've been there, done that, and have three T-shirts. But the fact is, I do believe that a near-death experience can profoundly affect not only if it's a lengthy process, causing extensive brain damage, it also, I think, opens up something in a person's mind to where they oh, I don't even know how to explain it. It gives them access to a part of who they are that I don't think they knew existed.
Exactly. And that's the type of thing I was referring to, that, you know, your experiences as an NDE enabled you to somehow access this deep knowing and your own divinity that allowed you to be confident when you made these statements to Kathy and just...
Well, I often make the joke, Julia, that, you know, what are they going to do, kill me? They've done that.
Exactly.
You know, that's really boring. And besides that, getting shot is not, well, getting a gut shot is pretty uncomfortable, but, you know, getting shot or getting a mortal wound is not all that bad anyway, because your body goes into shock and you don't really feel it.
Yeah, that's
a good
point.
The first few minutes, it's kind of nasty. But the fact remains is Kathy was tortured to the point of death so many times that I do truly believe that it played a role in her complete recovery.
Oh, yes.
And whether or not, I don't have any scientific data to back this up. The only data I have is from listening to literally hundreds and hundreds of people who've had similar lives and similar experiences, including members of the intelligence community, scientists, who have had similar things happen to them. And they all report the same thing.
Yeah.
So with this said, without any scientific double-blind study being done that I know of, then there must be something to it.
Yes, indeed. And I just had such a strong feeling that this empowered you to do this tremendous work, Mark, in being led to Kathy and Kelly and helping them to recover.
How fortunate for me that he had the wisdom and the insight to be able to see the soul in me, because the mind control that I experienced was so strong, I didn't have free thought or free will to have any soul expression. I didn't have any choice to be able to project soul. And it had been so many years and so long since I'd been able to do that. It was phenomenal that he could look so deep as to see that in me. And I believe that that is because of the vast insight that he gained. And then when you combine that with all that his life laid out, everything that he experienced from his that trauma as a young child with his mother that put him on a path of learning mind sciences, you combine all that with it, and it's phenomenal how we came together where he could help me to learn how to heal from the mind control and the tortures that I went through. I really thought that perhaps one of those near-death experiences that I happened to have under MKUltra, I might have slipped over to that other side or something and actually died. I thought I had died and gone to heaven when he came along, because I knew love for the first time. Kelly and I were safe. We knew peace. We knew love. And it's just a phenomenal thing for me every step of the way when he entered my...
Well, actually, she thought I was an alien. My mother, being brain damaged, was not necessarily always logical, to say the least. And she would tell people that I was an alien, that I was not related to anyone in the family, because I didn't act like them and I didn't look like them, and that there had been a UFO sighting the night that I was born, May the 17th, 1943. And she said, and the baby that she saw being born is not the baby they gave her later when they cleaned him up. So she just was convinced that I was an alien. Well, when Kathy unfortunately heard her say that, it was at the same time Kathy didn't even know who she was at that point. And Kathy was convinced I was an alien.
Well, maybe so, that's not such a bad thing, you know?
Well, I don't know. Everything on this earth seems alien to me sometimes.
Me too, Madame. That is so true.
But between that, and then it jumped from alien to angel. And then she believed that we were all dead, and I was an angel. And we were just doing her, we're going through the motions. And I explained to her, I said, I am certainly no angel.
Oh.
And I said, as far as I know, I'm not an alien. I said, because I bleed real bad sometimes.
Oh, God, this is tremendous. Well, how did things evolve from there? You know, when you... I remember reading Access Denied, and I could not put the book down except for, you know, having to fulfill my own responsibilities with my work. But my goodness, I was, you know, having lived in Nashville myself, I was right there with you as I was reading about all of these experiences in Nashville as well as in other areas. But, you know, how this, you did some remarkable work. I remember you were encouraging Kathy to write things down as opposed to speaking about it, because that switches over to the logical side of the brain.
Right.
And not imposing the emotional reaction.
Yeah, talking about traumatic events that someone remembers who is actually suffering from a dissociative disorder, a dissociative identity disorder, means that their personas are broken up.
Yes.
Or their I'm sorry, that's a misnomer. Their persona is fractured or broken.
Okay.
And it used to be called, erroneously, but nevertheless, it was called multiple personality disorder. Well, that is impossible to have because we only have one persona. Now, our personas can be fractured and fragmented, and we can have personas that are developed and compartmentalized to where those personas are triggered upon anything from a calendar date to anything that's around them. I mean, I had a doctor come to me and ask me if I owed the world a book on triggers. And I said, well, gee whiz, that's easy. And he said, what do you mean? I said, everything's a trigger.
True story.
And he just didn't want to accept that because he was, unfortunately, you know, mental health is the youngest of the healing arts, and it's only been around 100 years, and it's been controlled since its inception as an organization, as far as both APAs, American Psychological, American Psychiatric Association, has always been controlled by the intelligence community. As a matter of fact, the American Psychiatric Association was formed by the MK Ultra scientist, the only MK Ultra scientist that ever got caught torturing people. And that was Dr. Ewan Cameron in Canada.
I thought so, and I'm so grateful to you, Mark, for saying this. Because what I've seen, and of course being into alternative and complementary forms of healing, I have never ever resonated with the allopathic or conventional forms of so-called healing one iota, especially when it comes to mental so-called health. It just has never rung true for me, and it's been backwards and really horrific.
Yeah, I tell people that if they ever go nuts or if I ever go nuts, I've got a list of about five doctors in the world that I would be willing to have myself or them submitted to.
Well, healing is ultimately within. And
yes, it is.
And so many psychiatrists and psychologists want to lead you their direction, and that's just leading you outside yourself again, when in fact, you need to be able to be free to go within. And ultimately, Mark taught me to heal myself by writing out my memory. And the act of moving a pen made what was emotionally incomprehensible under mind control, it made it comprehensible to actually move a pen, because it takes the logic part of the brain to move a pen. And shifting that over into logic, all of a sudden you see it different, and it gives you an understanding of what happened, and there's a way to be able to deal with it and to live with reality from that point on. And that's very, very, very healing.
And that's probably why a number of people are encouraged to and do journal.
Yes.
I mean, without journaling and the person understanding that if they remember something, it's going to feel like that they've known it all their lives. And if they don't write it down at the point where, or make a note that it will jog their memory later on, where they're in a, you know, quiet place where they can write out the entire memory, because you need the beginning of that memory and the end of that memory in order for it not to impact your persona any further throughout your life. it's imperative that they not talk about it. And what do psychologists want you to do? The first thing they do is they say, how does that make you feel? Well, that's making an association with an emotional reaction that was not applicable at the time because you had no emotions at the time. And the point is, by locking it into an emotional base in the now, it recompartmentalizes the memory, and now the person is going to be harder to recover. So the physicians, many of them are finally getting it. Kathy and I spent about 17 years on the doctor and medical mental health teaching circuit doing workshops, and I can assure you that there are a tremendous number of psychologists, even social workers and psychiatrists out there that do understand how to treat dissociative identity disorder and dissociative disorders. And recently, since the government finally admitted that post-traumatic stress disorder is a real disorder, now you've got a lot of doctors that are conscientiously able to treat it and actually be paid by the insurance company or the government or whoever else that is helping cover the insurance for the individual. These are horrible things that I've seen happen. When, of course, the government, in order to cover anything up, they just deny it.
Yes.
Well,
yes.
And we were able to talk about the way to heal from trauma, because there's so many people that have been tortured and mind control or other aspects of life, and so many people have endured trauma. And the information that we were able to get into mental health on how to heal from it by writing out memory and by wearing a watch, because a watch equates to awareness. A concept of time is an awareness in itself, and that stops a person from dissociating from the trauma. It stops them from dissociating during their life, and it keeps them focused and present in their living. So wearing a watch and writing out memory were two key things that had reached proportions in mental health by the time that 9-1-1 happened, when the trauma affected the whole nation. And at that point, many people were using those facts and writing out the trauma and dealing with it by writing it out. So even a nation that's been traumatized to the extent that the United States was then, that all countries go through at some point in their history, that so much of the world is going through right now, writing out the trauma, writing out the memory is a very healing thing that allows a person to move into the future and begin to make a positive difference.
I used to explain to physicians that were treating dissociative disordered patients that the first thing they need to do is ensure the fact that the person is wearing a watch. And if the person refused to wear a watch, refuse to treat them. Because if they don't have a concept of time, even though they may not consciously be aware that they're looking at their watch, if they've got a watch on, face up, not under, they will in fact be on their road to recovery. And you know, everybody on this planet's been abused, and at some point in their life, everybody's been traumatized. All you gotta do is turn on the television, and the media's in this country are so horrible. That's all they show is hideous traumas. They don't ever tell you anything decent, unless it's some sort of photo ops for some politician. The point is, we're all being traumatized daily, and the fact remains is, if we wear a watch, that actually helps us overcome the negative impact of those traumas that we hear about or see on TV or even read about.
I've got to find a watch that will work for in the ears, because I've buggered any watch that I've tried to wear, so I haven't worn a watch in a number of years. That's a very good point that you're making, and also I do not own a watch television because of the very point you've just made about it. It's awful, and there's already enough that we've all been through. Why just keep reinstilling that negative energy? And so we need to focus on the good news now. And that's really what I wanted to get into as well, because goodness me, you've endured so much, Kathy, and both of you have endured a tremendous amount. And talk about a building of character, as it were, and rising above all adversity. This is really tremendous, and I'm sure our listeners can hear the love in your voices and what really, really precious souls that you are. And Kathy, I want to ask you, I know that you're talking about writing down the memories, and I do want to ask you, how did they start coming back to you? Did they come back to you in full segments, or were they fragmented? How did this come about?
May I inject something here?
Sure, please.
I think at this point, so Kathy can hear you. You understand her ears, she was tortured, and she has scarring inside of her ears horribly.
Okay.
So I'm going to hang up and let her carry this part, and if anybody needs me, I can get back on.
Okay, love. Thank
Even
you.
Even though
so
we're
much.
In opposite ends of this house.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Julia.
Okay.
Oh, are you able to hear me all right now?
Yes.
Kathy?
Yes. Great. That actually is a bit better. And I'm just so fortunate that Mark had the insight and the knowledge to be able to help me to recover from the absolutely impossible, because the tortures and the traumas that I endured began so early on, and I began remembering them only when I was safe and knew love. When Mark took Kelly and I to Alaska, my daughter Kelly and I to Alaska. So just being in a safe environment allowed for me to begin to remember what I was supposed to have forgotten, what I had been tortured to forget. It began to flash, you know, just little bits and pieces coming forward, just flash, flash, you know, what was that, what was that? And I began writing those little flashes down. And then I could just be at peace inside of myself in a meditative state, so to speak. And then dare to look at that further with a pen in my hand and begin writing what that flash was, what happened before it, what happened after, what it involved, and then as quickly as I would begin writing out these memories that Mark had, numerous friends who were still in the intelligence community that began investigating and being able to verify and validate what had happened. And of course, our congressional testimony that of these deprogramming notes are in Transformation of America, and it's all proven fact in that book that has been validated by these people. And it was so fortunate to have them doing that so that I could continue my process of being able to just heal and move forward and be free of the past, be free of it always intruding on my memory, intruding on my mind, you know, by popping in with these flashes. But it needed to be remembered. By remembering it and dealing with it, I was able to avoid what so many people have happened. You know, if they get these little flashes of what happened in their past and they don't want to look at it because it's so horrible, which I certainly can understand why people feel that way at first until they learn to write it out. But sometimes if they don't listen to that, then their body will manifest it in a physical difficulty, and it is so often the cause of illness when we don't deal with these traumatic things that are in our minds. The mind is very, very powerful, and it has a control over the body, and therefore if the mind isn't being listened to, then the body will manifest it.
That's a good point, Kathy. That's such a good point, lovey. And I wanted to ask you too, when you were taking some of these notes as the memories came to you, did you find yourself feeling more detached as you wrote them down, or were you still sort of experiencing them in a manner of speaking?
By writing them out, I didn't have to relive them. Like Mark had explained, I already survived them once. I didn't have to relive it. It was just a matter of watching it like I'm on mind screen, like on like on a movie screen or something. So it's not that I was removed from them so much because I had a photographic memory. When a person experiences trauma, the brain automatically, photographically records the events surrounding that trauma. So I had an actual photographic memory that I was writing out. To go into that kind of photographic memory is an intense focus that it doesn't really bring you back to that moment, because I knew I was in a safe place, but nevertheless, it's very, very detailed and absolute. It has a feeling of, well, of course I knew that. I've always known that. You know, so it wasn't like, oh, wow, this really happened to me. You know, I mean, I knew it did as I began remembering it, because it really was my memory. It was reality. And for that to happen, memories just feel like, well, yeah, I always knew that. But unfortunately, we can't really access them until we're in a safe environment and until we can get through the dissociation and begin writing it out.
Well, that certainly makes a lot of sense, too. And they were not counting on your recalling this.
Right. They never counted on the power of love.
Exactly.
They never counted on someone like Mark coming in and with the insight and the wisdom that he had to be able to make a difference, not only for me and for my daughter, Callie, but for humanity by breaking free of what was the misinformation that had been in mental health for so long, to be able to free people to actually heal, to actually begin the healing process. And it just seems so much bigger than life that he had that knowledge and was able to help me. I feel like the most fortunate, luckiest girl in the universe or something to be able to heal from that and to be able to tell people about it and say, hey, you know, it really is okay. There is no trauma so bad that you can't heal from it. You've already survived it. Go ahead and remember it. Reclaim that part of your brain. And in the process, you gain all these wonderful insights into how our mind, for example, how the mind influences the body. If the mind can influence the body to such a point that mind control is used in military special forces so that they can do superhuman things with superhuman endurance, take a bullet, not bleed, keep going. You know, they're able to program this into our military special forces. If it can be programmed in, what can we do with the strength of the human spirit, knowing that and using that in our brain? We use that for healing. So the physical problems that had happened to my body, I was actually able to use my brain and reverse what they had done to me physically and use it to heal my body. When I was diagnosed with cancer on three different times, each time I was diagnosed, I never accepted that because I knew I didn't have to accept that. That I knew that I had this God-given ability, this natural innate ability in me to be able to heal. I just simply had to accept the healing. So rather than accept the diagnosis of cancer, I instantly accepted the healing, and I went through that part of my brain to be able to begin healing my body. And I healed 100% on those three different cancers. I was able to use that same method to heal from cataracts. They say that's impossible, so-called impossible. No, it's not. I did it. It's proven. It's record. It's wonderful. It's delightful. And I've got my vision back and was able to do that with the power of the mind, because I'd learned that through the fact that when a person is tortured and traumatized, they gain 44 times visual acuity. This is another thing that the government was interested in exploiting in children who've been abused, you know, and recruiting them into MKUltra like I was.
Wow.
They know that this 44 times visual acuity will give them the ability, on the front lines of military or, again, in special forces, to be able to point and shoot and not miss their target because that vision is so heightened.
Oh, for goodness sakes. Well, I know for me, I've certainly gained a lot of, even though I'm visually impaired, I've got what I would consider acute concentration and focus.
Yes.
I see and catch things that most sighted people don't.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we have that inner vision. That
oh, boy.
Vision,
yeah.
That's so much of the most profound of all, you know, to be able to, to be able to see what's really happening in the world. It's like looking through the eyes of love, give us a view that's so much higher and grander than the regular sighted would ever see.
Absolutely. And I would like to ask you a bit about, you know, if there's anything that you are able to share about your NDEs. And you know, this is so interesting when I was talking with our friend David Icke, and he's saying, is Kathy not a beautiful example of the triumph of love over all adversity? And I knew that you had to be a near-death experience and, you know, the powerful things that occur as a result of that. And so I wanted to ask you, you know, if you can share a little bit about one or, you know, all of your NDEs, what you experienced. And because something, one thing I'm thinking about is the experience of remembering who you are when you do have a near-death episode.
Exactly, yes. Yes, well, the first was before normal memory, and it was as an infant when I was being sexually abused by my father.
Yeah.
And the sexual abuse, oral on an infant, not to be graphic, but only simply to explain, causes a suffocation. And there was no psychological trauma to that because I was only an infant. I didn't have any concept to be able to make a judgment
right.
that what he was doing was wrong. But nevertheless, my body experienced that suffering. And because of the magnitude of that suffering at the time, my brain went into the dissociative identity disordered mode. It created compartmentalization of memory because to be that traumatized so young, it's incomprehensible anyway, and there's just no place for it, and it's sectioned off in the brain so the rest of the mind can develop and function normally. And then I had more of those experience, particularly, by the time I was 18 and subjected to my first handler in MK Ultra, Wayne Cox. He was an occult serial killer that was also an assassin for the CIA. And he worked a lot of black ops and mercenary operations for the government as well. He was a very traumatizing person. I witnessed murder, which is absolutely psychologically horrendous beyond words. But I also experienced more near-death experiences with him at that time. And what happens that from those near-death experiences by my perception is that my spirit took flight. And with my spirit taking flight, my conscious mind also took flight. And it left my subconscious mind wide open to be easily manipulated. And this is what the government is interested in for MKUltra mind control. Mind control is the manipulation of the subconscious mind,
yeah.
where there's no ability to consciously reason what you're being told. You only do exactly what you're told to do. And so the near-death traumas were being deliberately administered in order to create the conscious mind taking flight and the subconscious mind being left to be manipulated. From that point of view, from that experience, with my spirit taking flight, my spirit had no ability to be channeled through my body, so to speak, because without any free thought at that point, no conscious awareness, no conscious thought, without that free thought, I didn't have the ability to have soul expression. And my definition would be spirit is the life force or the energy, the love that I am, and soul being the expression of that love through my being, through the
yes.
physical being on this earth.
Yes.
So without having a conscious choice to be able to live the love that I am and to live in harmony with love, to have that view we were just talking about, you know, through the eyes of love, to not have that choice and to not be that, my spirit was like detached. Only it was like connected through a tiny, tiny thread. But my spirit was detached high above without being able to be in my body. And since my conscious mind took flight with that spirit, it was as though I were looking down on myself.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard people report that, like when they're in a near-death accident or something, that they actually are like overseen or looking down on it.
Absolutely, yes.
It was that same thing. And so under mind control, when I was used on a White House Pentagon level during the Reagan-Bush administration, my spirit had that overview from above. And having that overview from above, they never could touch my spirit. No matter what tortures they did, no matter what they put my body through, no matter what they did, they weren't able to touch my spirit. So once Mark rescued me, and I knew love again, I knew safety, I knew peace, I knew joy, then I was able to be free to express again through my body. My spirit came back into my body, so to speak, and I had soul expression again. And with that, I've had the joy of living the love that I am, of living true to soul. As I healed, I didn't look to love myself from conventional means, you know, from outside myself, or from an ego standpoint, which to me, ego is our perception of self from outside ourselves.
Yes, very good.
I didn't have any of that, because after living all those years through that under mind control with my spirit detached from being able to be expressed, now that I had that expression again, it was the only way that I would want to live. The only way that I choose to live today is to live the love that I am, to not be concerned with what other people think of me, or to form a perception of self based on what others think, because what I know from having from that experience under mind control, with my spirit removed and looking over, what I know is that it doesn't matter what other people think. What matters is that we live our life's purpose. What matters is that we live the love we are. What matters is that we have our free choice to be able to think, to choose to live in harmony with life's purpose and a bigger view. From that space, it is the realm where there is what is termed, I suppose, all knowledge, where there is that that insight, that wisdom, that love, the knowing, that all is unfolding in life as it should. For example, what we're seeing today politically looks so horrendous. It looks like, oh, this, how much worse can this world get? When in fact, what we're seeing is what has been for so long, but now we're finally seeing it, we're able to act on it, we're able to choose to act on it, and be able to make a difference in this world with this new insight and this new knowledge. By knowing that that love always wins, that truth always prevails, that all is unfolding as it should, and that we are in the turning point to move into a peace and a harmony and a love.
And that's such an important point, Kathy, because I remember during my near-death state, that was driven home to me every time, the knowing, the realization that everything is evolving exactly as it should. Consequently, with that knowing, I experienced absolutely no fear whatsoever during my near-death episodes.
Right. No fear. Mm-mm.
And I was going to ask you, too, if whilst you were out of body and not... you know, that you were detached from what was happening to your body, were you able to experience that or be aware of that unconditional love surrounding you?
Absolutely.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Absolutely, and I'm aware of it now.
Yes.
It's like I have, most people have to meditate. Oh gosh, I don't know how to say this exactly right, so these are just words to try to describe. But it's like life gets in the way. When people are born into this world, look at the children. Look into the children's eyes. They have the wisdom of the universe in their eyes.
Yes.
They have that knowing, the peace, the love, the joy, the unconditional love, the unconditional peace, the infinite love. They have that because life hasn't gotten in their way yet.
Yes.
Once life starts getting in the way, it's like people have to meditate in order to get back to that space. And I feel... so fortunate because my life's experience gave me a freeway to that, a constant connection to that space, in that I'm always aware of it, and it gives me an enormous joy in living to know that with strength of spirit, nothing is impossible. Only truth can prevail. That strength of spirit is what everyone... is what I want for everyone to be able to realize in their life now. Instead of being fearful at what they're seeing, to realize that it's the first steps towards the positive change, to know the truth that makes us free, to know the truth that gives them that strength of spirit, to be able to make the difference in their own walk of life, wherever they are, to be able to touch the lives around them, like you're obviously doing, like my daughter Kelly does. She celebrates life every day, touching lives every place she goes, and by living the love that she is. In spite of the horrors of her past and those that continued to for her in the system when she was taken into custody with the state of Tennessee and all that's outlined in...
And Access Denied. Yes. Oh.
She's a beautiful, beautiful person. She hasn't had the healing... on the same level that I have, because her victimization was different. But nevertheless, her healing is on the same level because it's on that level of spirit. She has the freedom to be able to live that love now and to be able to live true to soul. Living true to soul, I don't know what else in life could possibly matter other than that. If everybody on this planet did that, if everybody on this planet lived without the fear, I do believe we would have world peace.
Well, that's why people like you and me and so many countless others at this point are sharing this, because I think that as each new person is sharing the validity and the truth that love does prevail no matter what, that people are going to really grok it, as I like to say. You know, that it's something... we wouldn't even be here right now, Kathy, if this were not indeed the truth.
Right.
And I firmly believe that, because in fact, when I was being sent back from my near-death states, I wondered, why me? Why am I being sent back? But every one of us is so important in the work and the messages that we've got to bear at this point, because there is so much fear just being... inflicted on people with the petrol prices and the cost of food and just
sure.
The survival thing. Oh my God, how am I going to get through? You know, how am I going to survive in all of this? And I'm saying, well, wait a minute. The other side of this coin is that there is a tremendous awakening going on. People are becoming aware of their divine heritage.
Yeah.
That's what we need to be focusing on and reminding people about. And it's sort of like tapping a child in the middle of night and saying, oh, this is just a bad dream. Because what we are experiencing on this plane is indeed a bad dream.
Right.
It's an illusion. And somehow when we're done with the lesson, then we will just be able to pop right out of it and return to our natural states. And this to me is tremendous. And I've been so inspired by you and Kelly. And I just think that you're such tremendous beings. And Kelly is tremendously talented. I'd love to see more of her artwork. But I wanted to address also, because I recognize this, the telepathy that you and Kelly shared. Because when you'd visit her at Vanderbilt and even some of these other places, if you were completely monitored, you weren't allowed to have any privacy, so you were able to communicate telepathically, and those who are monitoring you couldn't eavesdrop on that, even though some people do have the technology to eavesdrop on telepathy now.
That's so true. That's so true, and it's ironic. Well, not if I'm not. It's not, and it's no coincidence that you would bring up telepathy right at that moment, because you mentioned Kelly. My mind went directly to telepathy because she and I were talking earlier today about it, and I told her that Mark and I were going to get to do your radio show and to be able to talk with you, and was giving her just a little information there. She's so excited. She said, well, do tell Julia that I am tuning in.
Bless her, and I can feel it. I really can feel it.
I feel her so strong. But I was thinking of her telepathic tuning in there. So often, even today, because of the telepathy that she and I know from our life's experience, is so strong that we'll be tuned in with each other, and then finally we'll get on a phone to talk, and we'll laugh, and we'll just end up saying, okay, confirm, confirm, confirm.
Yes.
Because we already knew this.
Yes. Oh, God. And I was wondering, too, and it seems to me maybe even logical that as a result of what you two went through, because I'm sure it would more often than not push you out of body, push you to access your higher faculties, as it were, because again, indeed, as you know full well, we are soul operating on the physical plane. We have a brain and have a body, as Ike so rightly puts it, the body computer, because that's really what it is, and that the brain is not the source of consciousness or the broadcaster, it's the receiver, like a radio or a computer. So when these things are out of commission, our quote-unquote internet access is down with our bodies, then we go into soul mode, is what I call it. Our true consciousness takes over. And so I'm sensing that that's what happened with you and Kelly as you were tortured out of your minds, literally, that you resorted to your higher intelligence.
Absolutely. And as I was saying earlier, it's like because of so many years of being exposed to that, and Kelly, too, she was exposed to it from birth right up until Mark rescued us when she was 8 years old.
Wow.
And so she had been born into it. And nevertheless, even though I didn't have the ability to express love through this earthly experience in the way that I would choose to, by number one, protecting her from these abusers, protecting her from being used on a high level by the government as a young child, being abused by some of the people in the highest offices of this country that are still in power today that need to be taken out of their out of their positions by through awareness. I would have protected her from all that, but I wasn't able to. Nevertheless, Kelly and I have a profound love because of having been in that out-of-body love space that I refer to, that one where you're above. And we know, we've always known, even though we were tortured together and abused together, it never could stop the love that we had or stop us from being able to live that purpose now that we are free to do so. And now that we are free to do so, She has that free way. I have that free way to that space. We still communicate in that space by natural choice, and yet we have a lot of fun being able to bring it down through logic and conscious awareness into real time, into Earth right now, to be able to make a positive difference around us. And we have a lot of fun together. She is an absolute delight. She's fun. She's brilliant. She has some physical brain damage left from Vanderbilt when she was there.
Yeah.
That has put her on permanent disability for not being able to focus, to hold down a job, let's say, because that's what people normally do, or what they're socially engineered to do, or what is expected of us,
right,
or whatever, when in fact she's in that, she has a different view in a different space. So her focus can only be soul, it can only be spirit, it can only be that purpose, life's purpose.
And I think that's a tremendous gift, really. And I feel the same way about myself. I have been through such that doesn't enable me to fulfill the robotic agenda. Thank
right.
goodness for that.
Isn't it, though? And it's like, and she says, if my life's experiences are what bring me to the point that of being who I am today, then it was all worth it, because I am very happy with myself. I'm happy with being free to be able to express to other people what is going on, what is really going on in this world,
yes,
and that we're all okay, that truth prevails and love always wins. We are on that path, and we're at a major turning point right now in the history of all mankind.
It really, really is. And I was also thinking, too, that no matter what to your physical sojourns on this plane, I would venture to say that in her soul and in her true self, she never once questioned that you absolutely love
right.
her.
Yeah.
You know, and then, and as I mentioned to you too, when we were talking yesterday, when I had Robert Schwartz on my show, we were talking about his book, Courageous Souls, Do We Plan Our Life Challenges Before Birth? And it just feels, you know, experience and every example that he shared in the book of these souls who had chosen these, some even very severe traumas or disease or accidents, losses, what have you, severe challenges that actually ended up being such tremendous blessings, opportunities for healing, opportunities to show the power of love over darkness. And I would say that this is definitely the case with both of you, and that your souls chose to go through this so that you could be a tremendous beacon to the whole world. Because especially now, people need to realize, as dark as it is in this world, that only love can prevail, and you are a shining example of that. But it's, you know, when all of these so-called New Age gurus are walking about saying these beautiful words, unfortunately, they sound hollow coming from a lot of them. But coming from somebody like yourself and Kelly and Mark and even myself, well, it carries a tremendous amount of weight.
It does, because it comes from within, and it comes from that that strength of spirit, that and that love space, that knowing there, where oftentimes religions tend to lead people outside themselves
yes.
to look for spiritual answers, and our answers are within. And it's anytime that people are led outside themselves, they're going the wrong direction. So it's like that's a really good point to be able to turn back around, to go within and find that truth.
Well, because we are all, in essence, the part of divine source. And that was interesting for me, being on the other side, is I couldn't really feel any sense of separation from source and all life. I just felt completely merged with it, and I would venture to say that you did as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
and that even now you're feeling that, because once you've been through these experiences, which are indeed ineffable as far as trying to describe them, that there is this knowing and this access to that light and that love at any given moment. And you can feel it when you go there, and that's why a lot of people, after they've had a near-death episode, it's very easy to have what we refer to as a spiritually transformative experience, not even being ill or close to death, but just being able to pop into that space where there is that total merging with all that is.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Kelly has mentioned that that she's had experiences where she's actually felt like she could make a choice on leaving this earth, and it was, again, not even a choice, because at that point she knew that her life's purpose wasn't complete. She knew that it wasn't done. So it's not even oh gosh, the idea of a soul choosing to live a purpose, there's times during life when we can actually renew that choice, so to speak. But she definitely has made that choice.
Now how old is Kelly now?
She's 28 now.
28.
Yep.
Bless her. That's an interesting point, too, and I think we were talking about that with my dealing with my current health crises that I have done for, well, a few months now, and fairly recently, and my beloved daughter and I were talking about this, too. I was actually wondering if I was getting ready to pop me clogs, as it were, and yet something in me was saying, no, not yet, because there is still some tremendous joy due me. There's still something yet to complete on this plane. I want to leave on a very happy note. I want to do more music and set an example of the love and the joy and the actual bliss that is possible even on this plane, which is kind of unusual for me, because I thought, oh goodness me, any opportunity for me to be beamed up, thank you very much, let me go home. But for some reason this time I found myself kind of hesitating and pulling back, and my daughter said, well, Mom, that's the first time that's happened. You know, she remembers me being all too ready and anxious to go home. But now I've been holding back, kind of like Kelly has been, I think, feeling, well, I'm not quite done yet, so I'm just going to be very positive and make the best of all of this, because that is my commitment, is to serve others and to be an example of the power of love over all darkness.
Exactly. It's not fear of death that holds us here. It's not fear in any way that keeps us from that step. It's love. It's love for humanity. It's the love that we are, and it's our whole life's purpose. It's all so simple. It's all so pure, and life is not going to end before it's supposed to. Mark and I have been through some very, very, very phenomenal experiences together in exposing MK Ultra Mind Control for being U.S. government whistleblowers on a very powerful administration and control of this country.
Yeah.
And we've survived the impossible by being in harmony with that bigger picture, with being in harmony with love, being able to navigate safely through it. But we've had some pretty bizarre experiences, too, that have just left us looking at each other saying, wow, we survived that one. We must have more to do. You know, how did we survive that? You know, but nevertheless, it continues to happen that way. So people say, wow, aren't you afraid to blow the whistle on these high-level politicians? And people like Dick Cheney, who is clearly so violent. And it's like, no, not at all. We're not afraid at all. Why should we be? What do we have to be afraid of? They are the ones who are obviously in fear, or they wouldn't be telling the lies covering up, manipulating the minds of the country and the world. No, we're perfectly at peace in knowing that we're living love and doing what we're supposed to do.
And that is such a wonderful point, Kathy, because I was saying that as I was reading your book, Access Denied for Reasons of National Security, and a lot of it reminded me of many of the things that I and my daughter and others have been through, and I thought, oh boy, the light prevailed once again, and it really, really does, and we can't really explain it otherwise. It's got to be the love that enables us to get through. And me too, I don't really feel afraid. It's interesting how now I'm in Virginia and I'm very close to Washington, D.C., and I'm thinking, okay, you so-and-so.
Yep.
You just try to take me on.
Yeah.
And it was interesting seeing recently, actually, I think it was, yes, it was. It was on David Icke's newsletter, and seeing a picture of Rockefeller, and my God, if he doesn't look like a snake, I don't know who does, because he's got those perfect snake eyes. Nobody home there, and I thought, you know, you look pretty nasty and mean, but you haven't got squat on me, because just as you point out, they are flat thinkers, and
they
don't know the power of love.
They don't know any kind of wisdom, because they don't have that that kind of soul knowledge, that spiritual insight, and the power of love. They don't have any of that. And without that, no matter how intelligent they are, they're only thinking in a flat line. And
yes,
that's why wisdom outthinks a criminal mind every time. And that's also why it's inexcusable that these people are still in control of our country and destroying the environment and destroying so many people's peace of mind, destroying so much world peace, having so much war. This is just nonsense. These people need to be stopped, and it absolutely is time, and it's very much a part of the message that Mark and I have. What we witnessed, what we experienced individually and together about these criminals in control of the country, it's absurd that that we leave them in any longer. It's up to the people now to realize truth, gather their strength of spirit, and begin to make a difference. Refuse to follow these leaders anymore. Why are we following leaders that we didn't even elect?
There you go. And I was going to say, too, it's the same group of people who are controlling the whole planet, and their mode of operation is to inflict fear on everyone and causing us to be distracted and to forget who we are. And, you know, I remember a profound NDE, bless him, George Rodinaya. He actually was in the morgue 3 days and on the autopsy table when he came back to life on this plane. And he was assassinated by the KGB. What's interesting is that he said that his interpretation of hell is fear of the unknown.
Right.
And I think that that's what people are wrestling with, is fear of the unknown, even more than death, because death, quote-unquote, is an unknown to most people.
Exactly. And when you have no fear of death, there's no need to fear anything.
And that's the point, and that's why people like you and I and all of us in the ears have been sent back, I'm sure of it, to be a walking, living, spoken example of the truth of immortal life and love.
Yeah, that is the truth that makes us free.
Yes.
And when you find out how mind control works, it works through fear. Fear is the greatest control on the human brain that there is. And these criminals that use trauma and use torture to control people, like I experienced in MKUltra mind control, all the way up to the White House Pentagon level. The fact that they use these tortures and traumas and the terror levels, you know, the traumas to the nation, wars, these things that they keep using, the fear of losing, of not having food tomorrow, the fear of not being able to fill our gas tanks. So, you know, the fear. These are controls. These are measures of control that they're well aware of, because they found out through what the Hitler-Himmler research had uncovered in Nazi Germany, is how fear controls the human mind. And they use that deliberately as a means of control over the population. Truth, the truth and the reality of knowing what you and I are talking about here, about the love and about the peace and the joy, that makes us free. Truth, to not be afraid of death, to not be afraid of the fears that they're generating, that is the ultimate freedom. And that's the truth that we need to have out there in order to be able to make the necessary positive changes in this world.
And I think people need to realize that they cannot be destroyed.
Right.
And that's, you know, that's the bottom line. We cannot be destroyed. We are a part of this stuff called love, and that can never be obliterated in any way. Only the lies can be destroyed. And that's, you know, something that I was so grateful for in David Icke's book, Infinite Love is the Only Truth, Everything Else is Illusion. And when I saw that title, mm-hmm. I just said, that's some good up right there. There it is. And he was even describing in that book the different frequencies that love versus fear have, and that fear is a very low vibrational frequency.
Yes.
And love is a very high vibrational frequency. And so when people say, you can't mix love and fear, that's true, because they're completely different frequencies.
Exactly. That's so true. And what you were saying about the fear and the lies, it's like that is so much a part of this earth. And recently Kelly and I were talking about telepathy. And, you know, it sounds redundant in itself, you know, talking about telepathy. But we were discussing it. And because telepathy is an intuitive knowing that's in that love space. It's through the eyes of love. It's above and beyond the physical, so to speak. Therefore, telepathy, the way that I know it, and this knowing, this connection that people telepathically have, is above words. It's like words are of this earth, and those words can be twisted into lies. They can be manipulated. But telepathy is the ability to always see through the words to the truth, to always know what's being told. It allows us to be able to know when we're being lied to, when fear is being generated. But it's a spiritual thing, this telepathy is. But telepathy is a huge key towards people having the truth and knowing, the understanding that allows them to see through the lies and the fear.
I'm so grateful you're mentioning this, because I have also made an observation to people that even though people will use words, language in conversing back and forth, what actually enables us to understand one another's words is telepathy, because
yes.
When people are not telepathically aligned, then the words are taken out of context and misunderstood and so on and
yep.
so forth. So it takes telepathy even to understand language.
It does. It really does. And it's a phenomenal thing that when Mark first rescued Kelly and I had to be able to trust him. Trust is such a purity in itself. It is that telepathy. It's the truth. It's the love. It's the knowing. And after all that Kelly and I had been through, why should I trust a man? You know, just you know, to spell it out that way. So I had long since lost my ability to trust any person. I didn't have that capacity within myself. But I did have telepathy. And with that, I saw that Mark had that purity, that love, that harmony. And he had animals all around him. He had raccoons. He had dogs. He had he had foxes. And they all loved him so much. And there's a telepathic communication, a purity that's easy to understand with animals.
Oh, yes.
And I think when people are really abused, oftentimes they'll go into fields of veterinary science or whatever, anything to work with animals, because of the telepathy.
Yes.
The telepathy is very clear to people, I think, on an animal level. But because of that reality, when I saw how the animals trusted Mark, I knew that I could trust Mark through them, through their telepathy, through that interaction that was going on. Kelly and I both instantly recognized that and saw that. The people that we had been exposed to were torturous and abusive. And people who abuse other people like that oftentimes abuse animals. They have no regard for life at all. And the people that we knew that were so abused, I mean, animals knew that. They knew they were abusive. They'd stay away from them. It was a completely different thing that we were exposed to for years and years and years and years, even though our innate being was able to resonate with love for animals and a communication with our pets. Kelly still has that today. She is a proverbial horse whisperer, and I've got four chows now. We've always got animals around us because they are love. They are an epitome of a purity. But having seen that in Mark gave me the ability to trust him. And the animal showed me the way to be able to trust. The telepathy showed me that that ability. And through that trust came the first giant step toward healing. Without it, I never could have healed. And there's something really big to people understanding what telepathy really is and to be able to resonate with that frequency, because it gives us all of our answers.
I want to take a little minute to mention something, too, that I think you and Mark will both appreciate, too. He's a friend of mine, a physicist who's been on my show. His name is Claude Swanson, and originally he is from here in Virginia. He wrote the book called Synchronized Universe, and in it, he devotes a whole chapter to telepathy and remote viewing as well. And he's pointing out in double and triple blind laboratory tests how telepathy is not affected or weakened by space-time. So, though it is something that will work on any dimension.
Right. That's so true.
Yeah.
Oh, I wish Mark were still with us on this.
Well, you can go on my web.
It's just such an exciting concept.
Oh, it's absolutely wonderful, and I was meaning to tell you about this, and I like mentioning it to the listeners again as well, because I don't feel that I can mention or overstress that this information about telepathy, because again, that's what I went through again during 9/11, and my daughter was in Manhattan,
yeah.
I was in Nashville, and all we had to go on was telepathy, because all of the conventional quote communication systems were down. And you know, this is going to happen again, so what are we going to do? We don't have a telephone or a mobile phone or this or that. You know, we need to trust in our intuition and the telepathy, because I could actually hear her saying, "Mom, I'm okay." Telepathically, I heard her. I even heard her natural inflections, her tone, and I just trusted that because I already knew how very telepathic we were. And sure enough, that carried me throughout that crazy day until 9:30 that night when she rang me on the telephone. And then she told me that what I had been experiencing telepathically is exactly what she had been projecting to me.
Yeah, confirm.
Oh, absolutely. And so, you know, comparing notes with you and Kelly, I think it's just so remarkable, because it's natural.
It is.
It's as natural as breathing to have these experiences. But then again, the powers that be have focused on dumbing us down and saying, oh, that's just a fantasy, that isn't real, that's a tool of the devil, yada, yada, yada. Nothing could be further from the truth, and this is what we need to really stress to everybody that this is a gift, this is divine, this is love.
It's powerful, and it helps us to move in harmony with love. When Kelly was in custody with the state of Tennessee, and yes. I would sure encourage, oh my goodness, there's so much to say there, but I would encourage all of your listeners and all those who are following your site and everything, that they would please look into Access Denied to find out this phenomenal trail that Kelly and I took through the so-called justice and mental health system. But anyway, when they turned her out at the age of 18, Nashville's not too far from Fort Campbell, Kentucky, which is where our 101st Airborne are trained, and that's a military special forces where a lot of mind control is used, and it's a very strong mind control base. And so when Kelly was turned out of custody after all the horrors and abuses that she endured through the state of Tennessee at that time, by way of the state of Tennessee, through the feds and the people, the abusers that we had, like U.S. Senator Robert C. Byrd and all, that were directing what was done to her, the direction took her to Fort Campbell, Kentucky, when she was turned out, and I couldn't find her anywhere, and I was looking everywhere for her for 2 weeks, trying to find my daughter, knowing that they had done something horrible to her and that they were doing something horrible to her and looking for her. Well, in that time, the telepathy came through so clear, and it came through clear enough with such detail that I knew exactly where she was, how we could get her out of it. And I told Mark, and because he knew about telepathy and everything, he followed it. We went to the place that I'd never been before, never heard of before. This was after she was dumped out of Fort Campbell onto the streets of Nashville. But I knew exactly where to find her. Through this telepathy, she was telling me where to find her and to come and get her. And it was a very dangerous situation. It was like some kind of scene out of a horror movie or whatever. But nevertheless, we were able to go in and get her and take her to freedom. It's the love and that telepathy that took her out of a horrible nightmare situation at that, because I was able to hear it and respond to it. There is nothing on this earth that is above that kind of telepathic communication. That can free us from any situation, from any fear or anything that we're in, as long as we stay attuned and trust and rely on the reality of telepathy and the power of love.
What a tremendous testimony. I think I remember reading that in Access Denied. Let's get some information out there. And, of course, I'm going to have Access Denied, and the description is already on my website and on your profile page. But let's give out some information, your website and your phone number, how people can reach you, too, because I would definitely say this is a must read. This is so liberating and so empowering and so joyous. So go ahead and let's share with our listeners how people can find your website and make contact with you, etc.
Well, I appreciate it, because it will sure give more further details and information that are also pertinent. And anyone who needs an 800 number, it would be 1-800-656-3597. And aside from that, of course, they could go to our website at forreasonsofnationalsecurity.com. And I would hope that people would look into Access Denied. Access Denied was written for the people to empower them, to take them to their strength of spirit. Many people who've endured trauma are using it to heal from whatever level of abuse they've been through, and they're using it all over the world to heal from varying levels of abuse and control, including childhood sexual abuse, occult mind control, government level mind control, military special forces, intelligence level mind control, traumas that just happen, like such as 9-1-1. But they're using the information to be able to heal and deal with the trauma and be able to gather their strength of spirit and move forward with their lives. Of course, Transformation of America was released in 1995, and it is a testimony that we had for U.S. Congress. It was compiled from a testimony to U.S. Permanent Congressional Committee on Intelligence Oversight, and it has since been translated into, well, really more languages than we're aware of, because people just do it to get the word out there. But it's in over 8 languages and 40 countries, major universities such as the Oxford Law Library. And this information was stopped from public knowledge for reasons of national security. And when national security was slapped on our case, we were advised by a federal attorney to go ahead and release that testimony en masse through Transformation of America. So that is our testimony. It is quite graphic in detail, and the one that is really empowering is Access Denied, because it was written on wings of love and gives people the insights into the strength of the human spirit, I think way above and beyond what Transformation of America does. It is just the facts, whereas Access Denied is the facts and reality of mind control, because knowledge is our only defense against mind control. It does have the pertinent facts in there, but it also has the things like what we've been talking about here today, which has just been a delight to be able to talk about. those positives.
Oh, it's so wonderful, and I really love focusing on the good news, because ultimately that is exactly what happens. That's what takes place. And again, you've been such a tremendous example of that, and I'm so pleased that you've been with us for this past 2 hours on Toward the Light. It's so wonderful. So I want to encourage everyone again to please get a copy of Access Denied for Reasons of National Security. On the website is forreasonsofnationalsecurity.com, and also you can find Kathy and Mark O'Brien on my website, towardthelight.org/KathyOBrien.html, and of course there's hot links back to their website, information about the book, and I will soon have copies of the book available to for purchase as well, because I feel that this information definitely needs to get out there. My daughter read my copy, and then she was showing it to other people, and she's just been talking about it all over the place. So it's a tremendous and beautiful, uplifting book, even though it keeps you on the edge of your seat for sure. It's a wonderful source of triumph and the power of love. Well, it's really quite something. We've already gone through 2 hours, and so we're going to have to in this transmission of Toward the Light, but certainly we'll have you back, and I hope you three will give one another a big hug from me. This has been tremendous. You have been listening to Toward the Light, Leading Back to the Source. This is Reverend Juliet Nightingale reminding you, indeed, it is only with the heart that one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. Please remember that only love prevails, and we have definitely provided you a living example of that on this transmission of Toward the Light. So I hope that you have been truly uplifted, and indeed look again for Kathy and Mark's website, Access Denied for Reasons of National Security.com. Access Denied is the name of the book. Next week, we're going to have PMH Atwater on Toward the Light again, so you won't want to miss that. Thank you all for tuning in this week. It has been so wonderful. Love and blessings to all of you. And thank you once again, Kathy and Mark, for joining us on Toward the Light.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome, my dear. And we will speak to you next week. Blessings and light to all.
Where would $5,000 per week take you? Discover the exact details of a simple and proven system that quickly puts $5,000 to $10,000 in many students' pockets every week. What's most amazing is that there are almost no computer skills required, and you can start pulling in cash automatically within just a few hours. We are absolutely convinced that our proven system will create massive wealth for virtually anyone, and we'll prove it. Go to bbscashflow.com now and get all the details. That's bbscashflow.com.